Mr. Kip.
Redistricting Committee, any discussion? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. Members with us today, we have State Demographer Tom Gillespie. Before Mr. Gillespie, who was kind enough to make a follow-up presentation with us after traveling on the road, I want to thank you again for all of your time going to Raynard, Marshall, as well as Winona. Appreciate your time, as well as all committee members. Members have been inundated along with the general public on the census figures coming out and kind of what's been going on. You've been following the newspaper stories, different population changes, and so we, for members' interest, put together a little montage of news clips that might be of your interest. I think it lasts like 6 or 7 minutes, so if Paige just wants to start that, just for members' benefit, maybe just turn it up loud enough so everyone can hear it, and then we'll proceed with Mr. Gillespie. And Mr. Gillespie, this is not just to see, we can see you on television at night. Go ahead, please proceed.
Police today show the state is becoming a melting pot. The Hispanic population has tripled. The number of people identifying themselves as American Indians is way up. And Minnesota's small towns are disappearing. Here are the five most diverse cities in the metro area: Minneapolis, St. Paul, Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, and Mayport. WCCO's Nelson Garcia joins us now with more on the changing faces.
Well, the numbers don't lie, especially in the central city areas. Communities that were mostly white are now more integrated. We went to one Minneapolis neighborhood, which shows clear signs of the time. Joanne Christ has run the Black Forest Inn restaurant for 36 years. It's just along Nicollet Avenue, and not too long ago, this German restaurant was the most ethnic place around.
15 years ago, it was not terribly diverse, and it was in the midst of transition.
Now, if you look, you'll see an international touch. From Oriental food stores and restaurants to Mena's store of Latin music.
You can sing a lot. You'd be more Hispanic, Oriental,
The census reveals that there's more minorities in Minneapolis than in 1990, 38% of the population.
More and more of them chose to locate on Nicollet and open ethnic and specialty businesses, and so it's really changed the flavor.
Justina Pham's family opened the Duke Lloyd grocery store 2 years ago because of the diversity of this neighborhood.
There's a lot of ethnic groups, you know, which they come to the store. I mean, we have every kind of group of people.
I think it's better for me. More people coming.
Could be.
Some people, I mean, they don't know about other countries, you know, this is a chance for them to know.
In Minneapolis, Nelson Garcia, WCCO 4 News.
And Minneapolis Mayor Sharon Dale Belton joins us now to talk about what the numbers mean for the city. It's hard to believe that 10 years ago, 94% of the population here in Minnesota was white. Are you surprised by these new census numbers and the minority population growth?
I think if you just watch the streets of the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, I think you saw the diversity coming. We've watched it over the last, 4 to 5 years. The census now tells us the facts. And in Minneapolis, we now have a third of our population people of color.
Why do you think people are coming here?
Well, I think there's a lot of different reasons, but I think the thing that we talk about most is the fact that we have a strong economy. People left other regions of the country for jobs. I think in the case of many of the Latino populations, they were coming here for seasonal work, and now they've decided to come and stay to, you know, send their children to our schools and to become a part of the community. And again, as you just heard, this bodes well for the flavor, the character, the ethnicity of the city. We've got 8th Street now, we've got Mercado. People 5 years ago didn't know what a Mercado was, and they're all over the place now.
Is there any change in federal funding because of what the census reveals about Minneapolis?
Over the next few weeks, we'll be analyzing the data more carefully, and again, for those people in our population who are living at or below the poverty level, there'll certainly be more federal funds that might help us address issues of housing, human services, and other things that might help them to be more active members of our community. And we're very excited to first know and understand that more and more people are choosing to live in the city of Minneapolis. we know that some of these folks have come in from the suburbs and are choosing the central city as a place to live because of the diversity, because of the richness of our culture and the lifestyle. So again, this bodes well for Minneapolis.
Good time to be mayor.
Good time to be mayor.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mayor.
In St. Paul, one minority group is now being the majority among people of color. The new census shows that there are now more Asians living in the city than African Americans. The Asian population is up 12.4% from 1990.
20 counties grew by at least 15%. Half of them are in the Twin Cities. And nearly all the counties that lost people were in rural areas. Overall, the state grew 12% during the 1990s to 4.9 million people last year. According to an independent estimate, the census missed about 16,000 Minnesotans. Alan Cox has spent his day crunching the numbers, and coming up at 6, he'll take a look at the urban sprawl, and he'll take us to a very special spot. It's special because it doesn't really exist.
And we have some breaking news right now. A small group
than any other state in the Midwest, remarkable census numbers show the state is getting more urban and less rural. The metro areas saw the biggest population gains during the 90s, but rural areas, highlighted here, continues to decline. Air 11's Greg Vandegrift joins us now with more on what the numbers mean to you. Greg?
Rick, the U.S. Census tells us we are more suburban and more diverse. Bottom line, Minnesota is literally a magnet attracting the world. Census numbers show we grew by some 12% in the 90s, jumping to almost 5 million people, and minorities now make up 12% of the state's population, with big gains by Hispanics, Asians, and African Americans. Finally, we are more suburban, and the Twin Cities outer rings really reflect that. Look at these extraordinary growth rates. North Branch up almost 330%, St. Michael 263%, Woodbury top 130%, Savage 113%, and Farmington close to 110%. Minnesota's planning department says there's good reason for the growth.
Minnesota in particular had very high labor market, a lot of opportunities, a lot of jobs available, and people from all over the country and all over the world moved here.
The population growth promises political battles over the next year over new federal and state legislative districts. But the good news is that the third seat is 8 congressional seats, Rick.
All right, Betty, thank you very much. Well, that rally, we told you about weather.
A lot has changed in the last 10 years here in Minnesota. Results from the 2000 census are in, and population-wise, Minneapolis tops the list with more than 382,000 people. That's an increase of 3.9% from the last census in 1990. St. Paul comes in second with more than 287,000 residents, up 5.5% from 1990. Duluth holds steady in third, but the big surprise is Rochester. It bumped Bloomington out of its standing as the fourth largest city in the state by less than 700 people. Which cities do you think grew the fastest? You may be surprised to know the answers. Percentage-wise, Farmington came in fifth with 108% growth. Savage came in fourth with a 113% increase. Woodbury made number three, growing 131%. St. Michael came in second with a 263% increase. And North Branch grew the most, increasing a whopping 329%. It went from a population of just under 2,000 to more than 8,000 in 10 years. The face of our state is changing too. The minority population grew 5.6% in the last 10 years. There are now more than 141,000 Asians living in Minnesota, up more than 62,000 from 1990. The African American population grew as well by more than 75,000 people. But the largest increase is in the Latino Hispanic community. It went from more than 53,000 in 1990 to over 143,000 in the 2000 census. Bonita Sarkar takes a look at some of the reasons for the growth.
Family ties brought him home. Now he owns the thriving taco stand at the Mercado Central. It's a Minneapolis shopping center on the corner of Lake and Bloomington. The Mercado is filled with people like Miguel. Each shop tells the story of a Latino business owner moving to Minnesota to realize a dream.
There's a lot of jobs, a lot of potential here, and better pay compared to the other states.
He and his wife, Maria, are happy to call Minnesota home. They feel welcome. They left California because they couldn't reach their goals there.
They think that there's plenty of people that just come to take advantage of the things that they give us. So that's why they probably treat us different compared to here.
The growing number of Latino people in Minnesota isn't a surprise to state demographers. They've noticed the trend. Now they have the numbers to back it up.
Minnesota is changing. It's very similar to the rest of the country, and we are becoming a more diverse state.
That diversity is very apparent here at the Mercado Central.
Hello, cebolla, cilantro, salsa.
In Minneapolis, Denise Saukar, Eyewitness News.
State officials are still analyzing the number of minorities in Minnesota. This is the first year people could check more than one box for race.
For the first time, though, 2000 political posturing, especially when it comes to redistricting. Data shows that more and more people are moving out of both Greater Minnesota and the Twin Cities and into metro area suburbs. Republican leaders say it is time to make the Twin Cities one congressional district. Democrats, however, say Minneapolis and St. Paul are distinctively different and should remain separate. Census figures also show that Minnesota's minority makeup has grown from 6 to 9% in the last 10 years. The state's Hispanic population has tripled in that time. Newsnight and Almanac will have much more on the census in the days and weeks to come.
Creates fewer farmhouses in the prairie, more condos in the suburbs. Take a look at this. While the state grew, all of these 25 counties lost population in the 2000 census. On the other side, the hot spots around the state, Carver, Scott, Sherburne, Washington, and Chisago County shot up in the last 10 years. And if you look a little closer to the Twin Cities, Woodbury, Lakeville, Eden, Eden Prairie, and Plymouth grew the most during the 90s.
But if you dig deeper into those numbers, you find some crucial stories about how we all live. One example, a dramatic change in St. Paul. Tony Berlin explains how one group thinks these numbers mean more power. Among leaders have been anxiously awaiting the results of this census, and for good reason. The numbers show they could most likely wield much more political power in the years to come. Fleeing war-torn Southeast Asia, Minnesota welcomed Hmong with open arms. Now census numbers show the community has grown to be the largest minority in St. Paul. Leaders hope this will give them more clout.
To get that number, I think it's pretty impressive.
The Hmong make up most of the Asian population here, now at more than 12%, compared to 11% black and nearly 8% Hispanic. William Yang says he settled in St. Paul for jobs, schools, and cultural and family ties already in place.
Yeah, I'm stronger because a lot more resources to support family. Once they come to the community.
We have a good selection of Hmong.
In fact, Yang says the community has boomed again with a second migration. People like Yupang Chung, who owns the world's first and apparently only Hmong bookstore.
It's very good that we have the center of the Hmong community here.
Chung moved to St. Paul from Wisconsin. He credits a strong social network. While many leaders worry the Hmong are still undercounted, it's clear these kids will have more to say about the future of St. Paul. Tony Berlin, WCCO 4 News.
They're here.
Minnesota is the fastest growing state in the Midwest this last decade.
But not all areas are booming. Take a look at this map. The highlighted areas are places that actually lost population during the 1990s. All the rest gained. As a matter of fact, 20 of Minnesota's 87 counties grew by 15% or more. Carolyn's Greg Vandegrift breaks down the numbers.
Minnesota's infamous cold shoulder did not, as one might expect, turn away people in the 90s. In fact, the Midwest's fastest growing state jumped from 12% to almost 5 million people. Minnesota's planning department began digesting U.S. Census numbers today.
Minnesota in particular had very tight labor market, a lot of opportunities, a lot of jobs available, and people from all over the country and all over the world are moved here.
Gillespie says Minneapolis grew almost 4%, St. Paul more than 5%. But while the Twin Cities and the suburbs inside the 494-694 loop made modest gains or declined a bit, the enormous growth came in the outer suburbs. North Branch, almost 330%. St. Michael, 263%.
Woodbury topped 130%, Savage 113%, and Farmington more than 100%.
We're increasingly middle-aged, we're increasingly suburban.
And the face of Minnesota changed in the 90s. Gillespie says the minority portion of Minnesota's population went from 6 to 12%. Gillespie says Hispanics tripled, Asians and African Americans nearly doubled.
People moving to Minnesota are an awful lot like the average American, and the average American is much more diverse.
The population growth promises political battles over new federal and state legislative districts, but also agreement about our fair state.
I'm here by choice, so, you know, I think a lot of other people are coming here by choice. You know, it's a great place to live. I like Minnesota.
The wrangling over political districts must be complete in a year by the spring 2002, but the good news is Minnesota keeps its 8 congressional seats. Finally, it's worth noting Rochester leapfrogged Bloomington, becoming the state's 4th largest city behind Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. Rick and Jim.
Interesting.
All right. Thank you.
And that's a good segue into Mr. Gillespie's presentation, provide an update. When the census comes out, it looks like Tom Gillespie is a household name. It's from every major network there. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I always feel a bit self-conscious. My apologies, I do not have a formal PowerPoint presentation today with videos, mainly because I couldn't get it all into the file size to run on a video. So I have a handout which you should have, a single page map, which, my apologies, I couldn't actually get it to print out in color. Computer glitches today, and I have some maps of congressional and legislative districts and deviations, which I do not have copies for, but which should be reproducible, I think, in Mappitude right now at this time. News stories covered much of the material. Let me just summarize a few points that I think are particularly interesting. During the 1990s, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth all increased in population, according to the 2000 census. Just about everybody, Census Bureau, Metropolitan Council, and every private vendor had Minneapolis and St. Paul declining in population, as they had most of the larger central cities, particularly of the Midwest and the Northeast. Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth basically seem to have at least bottomed out or reversed a trend that has been going on for roughly half a century. Minneapolis had reached a peak in population sometime around 1940, and St. Paul a peak in population sometime around 1950, and had been declining pretty much ever since. And Minneapolis gained about 3.9%, and St. Paul about 5.5%. Duluth gained about 1.7%, not a large gain, but certainly better than a loss. Rochester gained rather rapidly, over 21%, in part due to the increase in population and in part due to rather vigorous annexation activity, making Rochester now the 4th largest city in the state. Bloomington, which had been the 3rd largest city, declined in population slightly and is now surpassed by both Duluth and Rochester to become the 5th largest city. And as we had discussed in previous meetings, the suburban, the growth ring, the newly emerging suburbs are where most of the growth is occurring, and exemplified by cities such as Eden Prairie growing by nearly 40%, and Eagan by over 34%. Those are the two fastest growing of the largest 15 cities in the state. And Scott and Sherburne counties both exceeded 50% in their growth. Similarly, as the news had pointed out, a lot fewer counties declined in population during the 1990s than during the 1980s. 49 counties in Minnesota declined during the 1980s, and that was reduced to 25 counties during the 1990s. And the counties that did decline in population tended to decline at a slower pace. And my apologies, there was a typo on my part on that graph. The growth collar that sort of outside of within the 11 county Twin City metropolitan area, but generally outside of the 494, 694 belt, as sort of a very generalized concept. As we indicated before, that is where much of the growth is occurring. Minneapolis and St. Paul combined for about 4.6% growth. The older developed suburbs, as defined by the Metropolitan Council, increased by about 3.5%, and the growth collar increased by 29% during the decade, while the rest of the state grew at about 4.9%. So it's that newly emerging suburban ring is where most of the growth in the state is occurring, and much of the rest of the state is relatively similar in the growth characteristics. Approximately 77% of the total growth in the state occurred in that growth collar.
Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. Yeah, Representative Seifert.
Mr. Chair, is it okay to intervene for questions just on that point?
That's fine. Yeah.
Mr. Gillespie,
Representative Seifert.
I just had a question. Representative Paulski and I were just kind of chatting here. The growth collar, where this massive growth is taking place, apparently, and you have it separated between the older developed suburb growth collar. What would be an example of growth collar versus older developed? Are you saying like Bloomington, Richfield are older developed? And give me some examples in the north suburbs. I'm a rural guy, so I guess I don't know exactly what's counted as older developed and growth collar, but I throw a few examples out for me just so I have an idea of the difference so I can kind of read the graph a little better.
Mr. Gillespie. Mr. Chairman, Representative Seifert, as a very generalized concept, even though there's some, like in Bloomington, for example, is just slightly mostly outside of the 494, 694 belt. Generally, if we can think of it as sort of what's inside the 494, 694 loop and what's outside, the Metropolitan Council defines this in terms of density and land available. Basically, the older, fully developed suburbs are places where there is very little land left to develop, and the newly emerging suburban areas are places such as Eagan and Eden Prairie, Lakeville, newly emerging fringe area outside of the belt. I believe the Metropolitan Council has maps that would indicate where exactly that is. The map in black and white that is a single sheet shows county population change, and again, very similar to our expectation, the largest growth occurred in that ring of counties around Hennepin and Ramsey, that suburban ring, and then up through the central part of the state. Cook County also experienced substantial population growth. We continue to have a number of counties in southwestern and western part of Minnesota that experience population loss And in many of these counties, this is a very long-term loss. Again, I believe I've indicated in the past, is the population loss in Coochin County, I think, needs to be tempered with the fact that there was an anomalous situation in 1990 with the Boise construction, where there were temporary workers in 1990 who were counted in the census who left after the construction project, so that this greatly exaggerates any kind of population loss in Coochin. Also, the television media coverage looked at some of the most rapidly growing cities. Some of those I may caution about. For example, the North Branch area is a substantial part of that growth is due to annexation and consolidation. And so that's a rapidly growing area, certainly, but it's not as rapidly growing as that would indicate, in part because of boundary changes that have occurred. I think we need to temper some of the reports with some idea of the boundary changes. I do have maps. Many please. Deviation and all the maps. I give thanks to Lee Miller, who and to the GIS, Legislative GIS Office, which we've been working with to create these maps, and they are attributed. You can't see states yet. As we anticipated, the largest negative deviation among congressional districts is in Congressional District 5, with a 9% negative deviation, and followed by districts 4, 1, and 7, the districts represented in the green shading. Districts 2 and 8 are roughly in correspondence with the equal population criteria. Congressional districts 3 and 6 are the two largest districts, and particularly District 6, which has a positive deviation of 17%, so that to equalize districts 4 and 5 roughly, there would have to be substantial changes in districts 3 and 6 to bring the state to bring all the congressional districts into equal population. And I don't know if there are any questions, but this is very similar to the deviations that we had estimated. And by House district, and of course, one of the advantages now is we have a lot more detail for the central cities, where before we just had simply basically one number for the central cities. We now see actually a fairly rich detailing going on. Again, the largest positive deviations are in the area surrounding the Twin City metropolitan area, in that growth collar where there are substantial positive deviations shown in the red, and the orange up through the north and areas up through the I-35 corridor to St. Cloud and up towards the Brainerd Bemidji area are areas where we see strong positive deviations, as well as some of the areas right around the central cities, and we can see in the north North Oaks Badness Heights area in District 53B, see a strong deviation, and also in 51A and 49A. The largest negative deviations are generally in the southwest and northwest portions of the state, and in the central city area.
as we had generally estimated. Although within the central cities, we see that there are districts where they're basically held their own. District 61A and 61B and 58A essentially are within a plus or minus 2% deviation. Now, this is not meant to imply that the plus or minus 2% deviation should be one that should be used, merely that is the one that has historically been used. So we focused on that. So that those districts are close to, relatively close to that equal population, and we also see some districts in the eastern portion of St. Paul, which are close to or just slightly larger than an equal population size, District 67A and 67B. And again, very strong population growth in much of that ring around the cities with very large deviations. For example, 56B, 60% positive deviation in that Woodbury and St. Croix area district.
Mr. Gillespie, the inner city districts you mentioned that stayed, you know, relatively constant, were there any particular reasons why that was the case? Was it minority populations in particular, or any certain reason why they kept up?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we haven't had a chance to thoroughly analyze all areas, but my belief is that there was substantial growth in minority populations. There was generally substantial growth in minority populations in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and that's more than likely the reasons why they were able to maintain that population. And since there was relatively less building or little building at the same time, much of that increase would be due to increased concentrations of people, larger families, for example. Much of the population loss of Minneapolis and St. Paul had occurred because the average family size was getting smaller. And as young people move in to the cities with children, that will increase the average family size and stabilize and even increase the population. We also have...
I'm sorry, Representative Plowski had a question.
Mr. Chair, before we leave deviation, I have something that I want to bring up that we picked up in our hearings, and I need a page to pass this out to the committee members. Two members brought this to my attention today. I'll wait till the sheets come out, but Mr. Gillespie will be also welcome to explain how this occurred or why it occurred. When we were talking about deviation of numbers, if you remember in Marshall, we had the first discussion of what might happen with undercounting in the dormitories. And then when we were in Winona, we had a brief discussion of it too. The numbers that you see are not from Winona or Marshall, but from Mankato and St. Cloud. So if we take a look at the District 16A, which is St. Cloud, and we go to Ward 1, Precinct 1, which is St. Cloud State University, or part of it, notice that in 1990, the audience, I don't know if I have enough for the audience, but there are some extras. It was 2,813, and certainly St. Cloud State University hasn't declined in population since 1990. It's increased. So if we go to the 2000 census, that precinct is about 1911. Representative Opatz had called today. The dorm population of that dorm is 3,000. So there's about 1,100 undercount in that particular precinct alone. And then if we flip it over, this is Mankato, Representative Dorn. And again, you know, in the column of percent change where you go to precinct 14, in 90 it's 2,980, in 2000 it's 1,213, And then the most bizarre one, of course, is 90, it's 12. And then it's 1,600, and in the Precinct 15, Representative Dorna just called, there are 2,900 students in that dormitory. Now, when we're talking about deviation of numbers, plus 1% or 2%, in these cases, this deviation would account for the problem that we have in the population. We could almost leave the district as it is if these folks had been counted, or unless Mr. Gillespie can tell me why they weren't counted or what happened here. This discussion went on, I think, because the second counting occurred in the spring when we had assumed that there may be fewer students on these campuses for whatever reasons. So, Mr. Gillespie, can you help me out here? Because I think that these are the first two members that have approached me. I have a hunch I'm going to have some more.
Mr. Gillespie, if you'd like to comment. I know you testified earlier that there even could be an overcount of students, possibly. So,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pulaski, there's a couple possibilities here. And we are looking at a number of circumstances similar to this. One possibility is that there simply was an undercount. That is a possibility that is certainly feasible. Another possibility, which is particularly related to dorm and to other kinds of group facility like prisons and things like that. Another possibility is that the facility was allocated to the wrong census tract. We haven't been working with precincts. We've been working with census tracts. But for example, in one example specifically that I've looked at is the prison in St. Cloud, which is supposed to be in Sherburne County Census Tract 314. Census Tract 314 shows up with zero population. But Census Tract 313, which completely surrounds 314, shows a rather substantial population gain. And so it's possible that, in fact, very likely that in that case, they simply allocated the prison to the wrong tract. That appears to have happened, or at least it may have happened, in almost every major prison facility, as well as a number of college dorms, where special census tracts were allocated for dorm and prison and other large group facility populations, and those were allocated to the wrong tract. We are trying to track that down, and there is an opportunity for cities to contest the allocation. They can't contest the actual initial count, but they can contest the location and boundaries and that sort of thing. There is a specific program that the Census Bureau will be going through. In addition, we have been engaged in something called the Census Count Review Program with the Census Bureau, and are now told that none of the changes that we have suggested over the last 6 months have actually been posted to date, but will be accounted for during this program sometime in the middle of summer. And so there are a number of instances where we are aware that there are misplaced group facilities. And hopefully we'll have data to help once we get the housing unit data begin to correct some of that information. But at this time, we don't have complete enough information to contest this.
Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gillespie, let's stay with Mankato for a second. P14. P14 has 1213 in 2000 and 2980. That's not a dorm. Those are apartments. Mm-hmm. So you gave me two examples of dorms and prisons. Now are we adding a third now, apartment areas too? That could be, what did you term that, Miss what?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pulaski, an apartment would not be a group facility, but it would be a rather densely settled series of housing units. It is possible that those also could be allocated to the wrong, to an incorrect tract. And as I said, we are trying to identify all these instances, and we'll make that information available to all members.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gillespie, when would we have that information in a corrected format?
Mr. Gillespie.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pawlowski, the Census Bureau is talking about doing that this summer.
That's what I thought you said.
And we are going to try to identify this in advance of the Census Bureau's activity. We have been concerned that in the past there's been problems with the incorrect placement of group facilities, and we're concerned that this is happening again. We were assured that the computerized process would not allow that possibility, but apparently it did. So so we are now trying to go through and identify all instances.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Gillespie, if you get those numbers to us in the summer, and assuming we don't go into special session, and if we stay on track, sometime around May, we'll have all the districts drawn, and we'll have two districts drawn here that maybe we didn't need to do much of anything, but we could be off thousands of students. And in one case, it granted it may be students in that apartment complex, but I'm told by Representative Dorn that's a long-standing apartment complex. That's nothing new. And certainly you wouldn't, with St. Cloud grow, or with Mankato growing, you wouldn't have a drop of 1,700 people in an apartment complex adjacent to a campus. That's a problem for us, Mr. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pawlowski, as I said, the Census Bureau is not planning on having this done probably in a timely enough fashion for your deliberations. We will identify this as quickly as possible and identify the instances where we believe this has occurred and to make suggested resolutions for those.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, members, you know, when we had the hearings across Minnesota, and I think we picked up a lot of good information, and one of them was the beginning of this discussion, and we haven't addressed principles as of yet, but certainly this is just two cases that have come up today. I haven't checked closely Winona or Bemidji or Southwest. I don't know if Moorhead. Moorhead could be another one. Mr. Chair, when we do discuss the principles, this does cast an interesting light on that deviation percentage. Because if we look at these numbers, when you're starting to go, if we stay at zero, these districts could be off by 3 to 5% or more. I think that when we do begin the discussion of the principles, we'll have more data collected. My comfort level rises now to the 2% to 5 rather than the 0 to 2, given the numbers I have here with just two examples, and perhaps more coming. As we see apartment complexes in the metropolitan area, if the apartment complexes in the metropolitan area are any indication of what happened in Mankato, we're going to have some interesting deviation there too. That's all I have to say.
Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson.
Going to Crookston County, there seems to be a precinct missing. Crookston County, West Crookston County, unorganized. That's the old papermaker's colony. Where is that located?
Is that
there's a good 500 people live out there.
Sorry, Representative Anderson, is that on the handout we have here?
No, I got. Separate one here.
Mr. Gillespie.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I can only say we will research that and try to identify where and get that information to you.
East Crookston County Unorganized is on here, and that's a French addition to the International Falls, but not West Crookston Unorganized.
Chairman, Representative Anderson, the Census Bureau did some made some changes with unorganized territories, and we're trying to identify those specific instances there right now.
And then, Mr. Gillespie, I assume that Lee Millier, I mean, the data just came in, and I know they're going through this process of putting the election data on the disc for all the caucuses and everything. I assume this is going to be a continuing situation of misassigned tracks, perhaps, which looks like it might have happened in Mankato, perhaps. I mean, just going across from the lines here.
Mr. Chairman, yes, sir. We are also aware that there is a potential problem in Sandstone with the prison being allocated to the township and a number of other instances of this type. And as I mentioned, we are trying to identify those circumstances. We are getting a lot of calls right now from local officials, and we've just sent a note to the Association of Counties, League of Cities, Association of Townships, asking that they notify their members of the opportunity to raise questions with the Census Bureau, and that we also be notified in these instances. And I will be also talking to the mayor and other officials of Moorhead on Thursday directly with them.
Please proceed.
We also, for your pleasure, presented some straight here maps of specific minority populations and as a proportion of district totals, just to indicate some of the changes we have seen. These represent only people who identified a single race. We have not started looking at people who identified multiple races. That number amounted to about 1.7% of the population identified multiple races, but the impact is differential on specific groups. In the for the Hispanic population, see relatively high concentrations in Minneapolis and St. Paul as anticipated, but also in southwestern Minnesota and western Minnesota, we see increasing concentrations of Hispanic or Latino people in the Worthington area and in a number of other areas of southwestern Minnesota. The highest proportion district for Hispanic or Latino population was District 61B in Minneapolis at 22%. By contrast, the Black or African American population is much more concentrated in Minneapolis and St. Paul. In this case, we do have one district which actually has a majority of a specific minority population, which is District 58B, at 55%. Another district, 65A, if we combine different groups, would at this time have a majority minority population. In that case, the African American population of 65A is 32%. But as you can see, the concentration is much more substantial in Minneapolis and St. Paul, with relatively little population showing up in the remainder of the state. The Asian population, which also experienced very substantial growth, is again concentrated most heavily in Minneapolis and St. Paul, with the highest district being District 65A at 21%, and 65A combining the various minority groups does give a majority minority population, but not in any particular
specific group in District 65A. District 66A is 18%, and 67A is 19%. And the American Indian population, now, American Indian population is the population most heavily affected by the one race, multiple race dichotomy. The non-Hispanic American Indian population grew somewhere between 8 and 57% during the decade, depending upon whether a single race or multiple race is employed. And so this map would be perhaps substantially altered by looking at people who indicate multiple race. But in this case, concentrations are mostly in the north central northwestern portion of the state, with a lesser concentration in the Minneapolis area. The Minnesota increased from a total minority proportion of 6.3% in 1990 to 11.8% in 2000, which is a rather substantial increase, and falls on rather substantial increases in each of the minority populations. But that 11.8% compares with 30.9% nationally. So while we are substantially more diverse than we were in 1990, we're still substantially less diverse than the rest of the country. One final point, the Census Bureau had hoped that by changing the ordering of the question on Hispanic or Latino to placing it before the question on race instead of after the question on race would have a substantial impact on reducing the number of people who identified themselves as other race. Unfortunately, that did not appear to be the case. The other race population increased somewhere between 200% and 305%, and 92% of the people selecting only other race are Hispanic or Latino people. So that did not seem to be what the Census Bureau thought was confusion, perhaps over the difference between ethnicity and race. Changing that did not seem to change the way in which people answered the question.
Representative Nabok, any question?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gillespie, the percentage of our population that is minority has roughly doubled in the last 10 years. Do you have any sense for what surrounding states are like? Is that similar to their experience, or more or less?
Mr. Gillespie.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knobloch, the gains were fairly substantial in surrounding states as well. I haven't looked at the entire minority population for surrounding states, but the changes were substantial. And let's see, for I believe I have the national number in front of me. Yeah. Bear with me just a second. Let's see. Nationally, in 1990, 24.4% of the population was minority race or ethnicity, compared with 30.9% nationally male. So the nation also saw a substantial change in minority population.
Mr. Gillespie, Mr. Chair, although not nearly as much as what we did on a percentage basis, I mean, when you look at the fact that our percentage actually doubled versus, it looks like, 25-35% more or something like that nationally. We've seen different maps of where different parts of the minority population are growing. But I guess if you combine it all together, is most of the growth in, say, Minneapolis-St. Paul, and is, I guess, is that what is responsible for the growth of those two cities, was the large increase in minority population?
Mr. Gillespie?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knobloch, that certainly was a major factor in that growth in the cities. And numerically, most of the growth of minority populations did occur within the metropolitan area. There are specific areas outside of the Twin Cities that also saw dramatic changes. Nobles County is an example. Worthington area, where there was a substantial change in the ethnic racial characteristic of the county. And changes did occur in many areas of the state, but the bulk of the change occurred in the Twin City metropolitan area.
Thank you.
Please proceed, Mr. Gillespie.
With that, my presentation is completed. Any questions, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Gillespie, just to follow up on Representative Knobloch, you had mentioned the 21% figure for Asian Americans in District 65A. What was the percentage increase in the Hmong Asian population in general? I mean, are there any concentrations in the Minneapolis area like there are in the St. Paul area that you could identify or
in my district? Chairman, members of the committee, the Asian non-Hispanic population increased between 87 and 113%, roughly doubling in population during the decade. There are some increased some numbers of people. For example, in 58B in Minneapolis, 18%, and 58A, 12%. The largest concentration continues to be in the St. Paul area, however.
Okay.
Mr. Chair? Yeah, Representative Marietti.
And Mr. Gillespie, I've been looking at these numbers as well, and they're pretty fascinating. And one of the things that's fascinating to me about them is that that, except for some exceptions, it seems to me that none of these minority communities are growing in geographic areas separate from other minority communities. For instance, in 65A, which is Representative Dawkins' district, that's historically been thought of as an African-American district because of the historical patterns of settlement, particularly related to the Pullman car era and the beginning of the you'll find some of the, I think probably perhaps the oldest African-American churches in the state still active and located in that district. And so when I'm looking at the new numbers, I'm seeing rapid Asian growth in 65A, but I'm also, in the same geographic space, seeing rapid African-American growth. And it seems to me that that's also happening over in at least the near parts of the east side of St. Paul, particularly the Dayton's Bluff area. It's probably further complicated by having rapid Hispanic growth in some of the census tracts in Dayton's Bluff. So there you sort of have this three-way kind of dynamic. In South Minneapolis, and Representative Gray can correct me, I'm less keen on the statistics there, the phenomenal growth of the Latino community in South Minneapolis seems to be happening in the same geographic area where you have African-American, old African-American communities and also growing African-American communities. So those are just my observations. I wonder if they jive with yours. That, one of the fascinating things here is that we don't have this real neat separation of minority communities, whereas we probably do have neater separations of minorities and whites, period, particularly in relationship to some of our suburban communities.
Mr. Gillespie?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mariani, I am aware that there there has been a substantial amount of growth, proportional growth, in minority populations outside of the core cities and in the surrounding inner ring suburbs. However, as we move outward from that core, the proportion minority population does tend to drop off fairly sharply, and there does appear to be a concentration concentrating of people of color going on in cities and some of the inner ring suburbs.
Other questions from members? Mr. Gillespie, you, at the beginning of your presentation, you identified and Representative Cypress asking about the growth collar, as it were. But if you took the percentage, can you tell us what the percentage of the population would be that just resided in the 11-county metropolitan area alone, say without Minneapolis and St. Paul itself? I mean, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
The Mr. Chairman, the graph on the top of page 3, pie chart. If we take the green portion, which is 31%, and the red portion, which is 37%, and that would represent the older developed suburbs plus the growth collar, that would come to about 68% of the population. That does not include Minneapolis and St. Paul. And if we included Minneapolis and St. Paul, it would be a larger number.
So, Mr. Gillespie, if you took the red pie chart and the blue pie chart on there, I mean, is that essentially the 11-county area minus Minneapolis and St. Paul? Is that correct? Or okay, all right.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Representative Mariani.
I have another question. I don't know how apropos it is to the work we have, but it seems to me that what strikes me about these census numbers, and we're still going through them, is that we can do a 10-year comparison. We can even do a year-to-year comparison based on estimate work that we did before. But basically, what they do is sort of freeze, everything in time, as of, that census taken in April of last year. But we know that we suspect, perhaps, that there are powerful trends at work here. One, obviously, I think we've talked about is the trend of the growth in minority communities. We haven't talked a whole lot about those, what's driving that. The other is the population shifting in terms of suburban communities, and then also in good chunks of rural Minnesota, where I'm told you can go through whole counties where everyone's over 50 or something like that, But I guess my question is, at what point is it your office that will try to make projections about or explain these trends and make projections where we might be 5 years from now or at the time of the next census? And if so, at what time do you do that? Is that something you do once you sort out all the census information? And because it seems to me, as we draw lines, although we're bound by the actual numbers of the census, important for us to keep in mind sort of the trends that are going on.
Mr. Gillespie?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Morgan, we will be making projections. For your information, the Metropolitan Council also makes projections just to the metropolitan area, and our projections aren't always the same. Different people make forecasts, and that's fine. We will be receiving information by age and sex in the middle of the summer, and that'll give us the basis of information which we can begin to make projections, and we should have projections within by about a year from this summer. One of the difficulties that we're trying to deal with is the change definition of race, in particular the the fact people can check more than one race does seem to have substantially altered the way people answer race questions. And so right now we're not sure quite how we go about coming up with life tables and fertility forecasts, things like that, for groups that we don't have a historical basis for. We are in contact with other states and with the federal government know where people are putting their heads together trying to figure out a way to deal with this at this time. But right now that's a bit of a sticky problem. We have more information on population, certainly richer information, but the richness of that information also means that there's a lot of confusion and a lack of historical basis for constructing trend analysis. So that's one of the things that we're going to be working with and trying to get a better sense. The one group that did not change is the Hispanic group. And that's one group that we did not have a change. Presumably, the question was asked in pretty much the same way in 1990 as it was in 2000. So we should have better information on the Hispanic Latino population and the trends there.
Mr. Gillespie, I have my own suspicions about trends, and one is that I don't think that the suburban phenomena is a sustainable long-term trend, based on primarily some very real land constraints and infrastructure constraints, but also based on where the demographic group that's driving phenomenal suburban growth, i.e., white communities that tend to be older median age, smaller household size, et cetera. I also have a suspicion that rural trends could turn around in the next decade or so, particularly because of the growing minority communities and some of those rural areas that do have a smaller median age and do tend to have larger family sizes. But they're just simply my, kind of my guesses. Where would I go to engage that? Would it be the Metropolitan Council? Would it be your office? Would it be local county entities? And when would that work begin? Really after we're done with all this current sorting?
Mr. Gillespie?
Chairman Representative Mariani, we also, in addition to making projections, we also make annual estimates of population by county and city and township, and work with local officials in making those estimates of what is happening in terms of the current population, and try to identify trends as approximately that they're happening, so that we don't wait for 10 years. So, we would certainly be welcome having a discussion with you and. Regarding the trends, we could also structure a discussion with the Metropolitan Council in this case, and with other planning and council government and regional commissions throughout the state that also do similar kinds of analysis that can certainly help pull together a discussion group if you wish.
Thank you. Representative Riffenberg had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Gillespie, I think my question may be more of a summary question of your presentation, but what would you say are the two or maybe three things that stand out that you can say that we've learned from the 2000 census?
Mr. Gillespie?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Riffenberg, I'm always tempted to say humility, which is always a humbling experience, particularly when we make estimates and projections about it. The future, because no matter how hard we try, there's always some difference. Of course, the Census Bureau counted more people than I think anyone had anticipated, and the hope is that is a real count that represents a reduction in the substantial reduction in the undercount, so that there's real hope and some indication that hope is fact-based that this census is a substantially improved census. The central cities may have bottomed out and may be reversing a trend over a long period of time. That said, that does not substantially alter the basic conclusions that if we look at the congressional districts, for example, we see in large scale that the suburban districts are growing very rapidly and have substantially increased in their population, much more so than the central city or most non-Twin City area districts. And so that trend continues, though perhaps not as dramatic as it was during the 1980s, but that trend still continues of a general suburbanization trend. Basically, we're becoming more suburban and, unfortunately, also more middle-aged. So,
any other questions for members?
Not on this, Mr. Chairman. One other question.
Just to let you know, you have another question? I was just going to let members know, I'll make an announcement. We'll probably have one, two, possibly three additional hearings on the near future, next week or two, with some different minority groups to come in. Staff's had some preliminary contacts to hear from some folks. So I expect we'll do that prior to having a hearing on a standards bill.
Mr. Chair, that was my question. What might we expect for a hearing on the principles, and what would the timeline be to get the major bill out of this committee and start moving it on its course to the Senate?
Sure, I expect the standards bill. I mean, if we take up the principles, it'd probably be mid-April at the earliest, mid to late April, and then that'll give us some time, to work with potential tract issues, census tract issues, as we move forward with the bill. Hopefully, none of us will be on any conference committees, and we can work on redistricting as we go into the end of May. Representative Gray.
Mr. Chairman, you indicated that staff is in the process of contacting various minority organizations to testify, and I just wanted to say I would love to assist in any way possible. There are some folks I know already who are interested in testifying for the record, and would love to make those names available as well.
Yeah, absolutely, Representative Gray. So please feel free. We can talk. That's all. Thanks, members.